chapter 40. We heard a little Job yesterday, Wayne. He got on it a little bit. Brother Wayne hit me up right after. He said, I believe I've heard that recently. I said, yeah, I believe you had. He was actually on Job 38, I think, which we were on last week. No, he wasn't on 38 because he was in something about Elihu had said, I think. But anyway, he was right there. In the previous lesson that we dealt with last week, God came on the scene. Now, that's quite a breath of fresh air after Job and his three friends been going around for so long. And then Elihu finally stepped up, who was a bit of fresh air, but when God clears the air, it's clear. He interrogated Job with numerous questions. Now, I do use the word interrogated with purpose because if you'll recall, Job had said numerous times that he had a desire to go to court with God. He wanted to stand before God. He wanted to stand face to face with God. And he wanted to plead his case. And God said, that's fine. I'll be the interrogator, Job. And I'm going to ask you some questions. You stand up like a man and you answer the things that I'm going to say. And he asked some hard questions. Most of what he dealt with last week, well, we could just really quickly look back at the first of the 38th chapter. The fourth verse, we'll just read a couple here. But these are the type of questions that he asked Job. By the way, those that would have us think he's answering the friends here. Verse 1 says, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. He's talking to Job. Verse 4, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? I mean, does God have the authority to do what He will with His creation, or does He not? You know, tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurement? Surely you know. Of course, Job did not actually know. God goes on to ask him a number of questions relative to creation and weather patterns and how he took care of animals and all those things. Job has no answer. Chapter 40, God initially here challenged Job to answer what he's already said. Look here, moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, shall the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? Again, God's talking to Job, and it was Job who had contended and attempted to correct God. Now, at the end of the discussion with the three friends, Job was the one in the right. It's not that. Job was not guilty of the sin they were saying. But along the line, there were a few things that Job had said that were not correct. That is, that God blessed those that were guilty and those that were innocent, He cursed. And that some of the things that had happened to him, he didn't feel like were fair. Some of those type things. And that's what God is addressing here. Who rebukes God? Let him answer it. God had so thoroughly defended his wisdom and power that Job was forced to see his lack of understanding and power. Do you understand what's going to happen tomorrow? No. Nobody here doesn't have plans tomorrow, I'm sure. We all have plans. Those plans may or may not come to fruition. There is one that knows God. That's it. Job clearly confesses that he was wrong to have said some of the things that he did. There is no doubt about this. Listen to the words of Job. Now, it's one thing for an expositor these days to say, well, I theologically do not feel that Job made any error. Well, Job and God were there. I know that's deep theology, right? Job and God were there in the conversation. And Job said he said some things wrong. Don't you think then if God's corrected him and Job says, yeah, I said some things wrong, that he probably did? I mean, it's silly theology to say otherwise. Listen to what Job said. Then Job answered the Lord and said, behold, I am vile. You recall Job wanted to plead his case with God. Here's his case. This is what he pleads after God's two chapters of declarations. I am vile. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand over my mouth. Job's not going to answer anything. He says, once I've spoken, but I will not answer. He said, I've said some things. I'm not saying any more. I've said enough. Yes, twice, but I will proceed no further. Job clearly says that he had said some things wrong. I am not in any way thinking that I would be better than Job. Job had a lot laid on him. Job handled this greatly. I told you, every year that I read the book of Job, I end up saying, Lord, please don't put me through this trial right here, because I will be worse than Job at the end of the book. But God was not being unfair to Job. In fact, truth be known, God Himself had defended Job before all of those in heaven. There is not another like Job on the face of the earth. And you know what Job never did throughout this entire time? He never cursed God. So God was right. We don't have to go to the fact or to the point of believing that Job was without error to defend Job. Job was right in this book. He was right with the friends when he was confronting them. Elihu comes on there and he defends Job. Job was an upright man. He feared God. He shunned evil. He was a good man in every way that we look at that. He just said a few things along the way that weren't right. And that was that God had not treated him fairly because he'd served God and the wicked are still out here prospering. Job didn't understand that. We don't always understand that. God's simply telling Job, this is my world. You're not going to understand everything that happens. That's one of the points that was made by Elihu that he actually read yesterday. Look, weather happens for various reasons. Sometimes it's for the land, sometimes it's for blessing, sometimes it's for curse. We don't know why it happens. It just happens. And that's all we know. We don't know why God may be using it. We don't know why this is happening to Job. Well, we do. Because we have the book. But if we're there with Job, they didn't know why these things were happening to Job. What Job says here is an admission that God was all too wise and powerful, T-O-O, wise and powerful, to contend with him. So God continues. And God says some things in the next few passages that are very interesting. He again says, the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you and you shall answer me. Stand up, Job, and answer. Would you indeed annul my judgment? Would you condemn me that you may be justified? Have you an arm like God? Or can you thunder with a voice like His? Then adorn yourself with majesty and splendor, and array yourself with glory and beauty. Disperse the rage of your wrath. Look on everyone who is proud and humble him. Look on everyone who is proud and bring him low. Tread down the wicked in their place. Hide them in the dust together. Bind their faces in hidden darkness. Then I will confess to you that your own right hand can save you. That's strong language. That's strong. He tells Job that if he has the power and the wisdom equal to God, then he should take over being God. God doesn't believe Job has that, but that's what he's telling Job. Listen. Listen close to what he says. Have you an arm like God in verse 9, or can you thunder with a voice like his? He's asking Job that. Then he says this to Job. Then you do this, Job. Then adorn yourself with majesty and splendor. And array yourself with glory and beauty, Job. Disperse the rage of your wrath. Look on everyone who is proud and humble him. Look on everyone who is proud and bring him low. Tread down the wicked in their place. You know, that's sort of what Job felt like should be done. You know, those that are serving God ought to be sort of blessed, and those that are not, they ought to be cut off right then and there. That's not the way God does things. We're thankful that's not the way He does things, because none of us would be here today if that's the way that He did things. But He goes on and He says in verse 13, Job, hide them in the dust together, bind their faces in hidden darkness. Then God says this, then I, God, will also confess to you, Job, that you can save that your own right hand can save you. He says, Job, if you can adorn yourself like that and you can do all those things, then I, God, will confess that you have the power to save yourself. Could Job do those things? No. No. You know, this is what Job's said here is not uncommon with man. We all have a tendency to try and think that we have it all under control. That's all God's saying. He's got it under control. You know, really, the things that he's telling Job are not to hurt Job, but to encourage Job. Think about that. Does Job really want to be in control right now as he lays in ashes and sackcloth and all these sores and all that stuff? Or does he want God to be in charge of this? See, really what God's telling him is, Job, I'm sovereign over this. I can fix this. You don't want to be the one in charge. And we really don't want to be in charge ourselves, though we think we do. We are introduced to an animal. God sort of changes the subject in verse 15 back to the animal kingdom. And he talks about another animal for the rest of this chapter that he created, controls, and protects. Some people have tried to make this be a hippopotamus. It is not a hippopotamus. Whatever this is, it's not a hippopotamus. I believe that behemoth, or ever how you say that word, is a dinosaur. And that's what most conservative biblical scholars, or as Brian would say, other conservative biblical scholars, believe, that this is a dinosaur. Listen to what he says here. Look now at behemoth, which I made along with you. So God created this being, whatever it was. Then he goes on to say, see now his strength is in his hips and his power in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. You ever seen the tail of a hippopotamus? Little old bitty thing. Not a cedar tree. Whatever animal this is has a tail that God is likening to a cedar tree. You know what that sounds like to me? It sounds like a dinosaur. Not a dog. Not a cat. Not a hippopotamus. It's a dinosaur. We dig up bones of dinosaurs, don't we? They were real. We don't see a lot of them today. Not in Alabama. They may be some in Mississippi. We don't see a lot of them. They died out for one reason or another. I have my ideas of why that was. I think man killed a few of them off because they were a nuisance after we finally figured out how. Who wants to move in the neighborhood where the dinosaur lives? Nobody, you know. There may be still be a few living out in the outskirts of nowhere. I don't know. There have been some claims of that. He moves his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his strength are tightly knit. His bones are like beams of bronze. His ribs like bars of iron. He is the first in the ways of God. He's the biggest animal God created. That's big. There's some big animals living today. This one's bigger. Only he who made him can bring near his sword. This is what he's teaching Job. Job, you can't control the dinosaur, but I can. And I can control your sickness, Job. I can heal you. It's not a problem. Surely the mountains yield food for him, and all the beasts of the field play there. He lies under the lotus trees and in covert of reeds and marsh. The lotus trees cover him with their shade. The willows by the brook surround him. Indeed, the river may rage, yet he is not disturbed. He is confident, though the Jordan gushes into his mouth. You ever seen an animal go down to the river and drink so much water that the water level starts going down? This is a big animal. This is not a dog. This is a big animal. Though he takes it in his eyes or one pierces his nose with a snare, God's saying, look, even that big animal, behemoth or ever how you say it, I take care of him too, Job. Man doesn't. I got shade for him. I got food for him. I got water for him. I take care of him. And I can take care of you, Job. See, this ought to be comforting to Job, really. And I think we'll be in the end. I don't think God is just correcting Job to correct him. He will the friends, it'll seem that way. But I think God is bringing Job to a greater faith. I think God is encouraging Job in the end. He's just using this way to do it. He talks about another animal in chapter 41, Leviathan. Leviathan. You know what I believe this is? Dinosaur. Yep, fire-breathing dragon. What? That's what I think. I do. And I think if we just take the Bible as it reads, we'll all sort of come to that conclusion. Leviathan, this is not the first time Leviathan is spoken of, by the way, in the Scripture. Psalm 74:14 says that he was made to be food for the people inhabiting the wilderness. Psalm 104:26 says that he plays in the sea. See, he's a water-dwelling dinosaur. Where the ships sail about, he's out there in the middle. He's out. Some might say, well, what about that Loch Ness Monster thing? Well, I don't know. Probably a lot of people lying about that. But there's been like 15,000 sightings. Hard to believe they're all lying. But I don't know. I don't know. Isaiah 27:1 says that God's going to punish him. That's interesting. And then we have this whole chapter that is about him. Let's just read it. Can you draw out Leviathan with a hook or snare his tongue with the line which you lower? Seems like this creature was hard to control. Can you put a reed through his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he make supplications to you? Will he speak softly to you? In other words, Job, can you control this guy? Is he just going to do what you say? You can train a dog to roll over. I don't think you could train Leviathan to roll over. Will he make a covenant with you? Will you take him as a servant forever? Will you play with him as with a bird? No, I'm not. Or will you leash him for your maidens? Will your companions make a banquet of him? Will they apportion him among the merchants? Can you fill his skin with harpoons or his head with fishing spears? Lay your hand on him. Remember the battle. Never do it again. You see what he says there? Lay your hand on him. Then you'll remember the battle, and you will never attempt that ever again. Don't you believe there were some people who, you know, sort of rednecks-like? I'm sure they had rednecks back in Israel or wherever this was at that time, and they said, I'll kill that thing. Lance, you'd have tried that. You and your brothers. Oh, man, that's a story there. We might let Lance give his testimony sometime. Y'all know what he's talking about. I'll try to kill that thing. And they come back and they said, I'll never try that again. And people be saying, oh, Bubba ain't going near that thing. I'm not going near that thing. Indeed, any hope of overcoming him is false. Shall one not be overwhelmed at the sight of him? But you saw him coming around the mountain, you started going the other way. No one is so fierce that he would dare stir him up. Who then is able to stand against me? You see what he's teaching Job? If you can't even stand against a creature that I created, can you stand against me? I'm in control of this creature. Who has preceded me that I should pay him? Everything under heaven is mine. I will not conceal his limbs, his mighty power, graceful proportions. Who can remove his outer coat? He's back to talking about Leviathan. Who can remove his outer coat? Who can approach him with a double bridle like you would a horse? Who can open the doors of his face with his terrible teeth all around? His rows of scales, that's interesting, are his pride. Shut up tightly as with a seal. One is so near another that no air can come between them. You see, they tried to throw some spears at this thing and they just bounced off. They wouldn't go through. They wouldn't cut. There was nowhere to get between because they were so tight that air couldn't even fit between them. God built this thing to succeed in battle. They are joined one to another. They stick together and cannot be parted. Still talking about his scales. Listen to this, verse 18. His sneezings flash forth light. And his eyes are like the eyelids of the morning. Out of his mouth go burning lights. Sparks of fire shoot out. Oh, that fire-breathing dragon comment that y'all was thinking a while ago, hey, that's not so far-fetched, is it? We can either take this and say, well, that doesn't mean what it says. Then we can do any verse that way. Or we can just say, I'm going to believe it just like this. I think we'd be better to do that. Look what it says in verse 20. Smoke goes out of his nostrils as from a boiling pot and burning rushes. So just in case you're having trouble picturing this thing, he's huge. When you see him, you go the other way. You can't succeed. He has scales, I assume, to benefit him in the water, but they are so tightly put together that nothing can penetrate them, and he breathes fire. I'd rather not meet him in a dark alley. And you know what God's telling Job? I'm in charge of him, Job. How about you? Well, then if you can't question this animal, you can't question me. The difference between this animal and God is that this animal didn't have any care or concern about Job, and God did. That makes it a world of difference. Verse 21, his breath kindles coals and a flame goes out of his mouth. I can't imagine it. Strength dwells in his neck and sorrow dances before him. The folds of his flesh are joined together. They are firm on him and cannot be moved. His heart is as hard as a stone, even as hard as the lower millstone. When he raises himself up, the mighty are afraid. Because of his crashings, they are beside themselves. Though the sword reaches him, it cannot prevail, nor does spear, dart, or javelin. He regards iron as straw. That doesn't make your weapons worth a whole lot. And bronze as rotten wood. Strong animal. The arrow cannot make him flee. Sling stones become like stubble to him. Darts are regarded as straw. He laughs at the threat of javelins. His undersides are like sharp potsherds. He spreads pointed marks in the mire. He makes the deep boil like a pot. That's the water, the sea. He makes it boil like a pot. He makes the sea like a pot of ointment. He leaves a shining wake behind him. One would think the deep had white hair. On earth, there is nothing like him, which is made without fear. He beholds every high thing. He is king over all the children of pride. The Lord says that this animal, whatever it was alive during Job's time. See, I don't believe that scientists recently discovered dinosaurs. I believe they lived. It's not unchristian to believe in dinosaurs. But it's faulty theology to believe that they lived billions of years ago. It's not faulty theology to believe they lived. They did live. We didn't just find out about dinosaurs, by the way, when we dug them up a couple hundred years ago. We wondered for decades or for centuries what those things were on those cave walls. What's that? Oh, just something made up. Then we finally dug one up and said, oh no, cave walls. They used to see these things. You see, they drew on cave walls what they saw. Dinosaurs have lived with man. Man's weapons have tried to attack it and overcome it. Dinosaurs did not live billions of years ago. They lived before and after the flood. You say you believe Noah had two on the ark? I do. How in the world did it not sink? Noah was pretty smart. He had 120 years to think that thing through, by the way. He probably took a baby boy dinosaur and a baby girl dinosaur on the ark. And it doesn't take a lot of figuring. We think, man, he's going to get the best two out there, the biggest two. He didn't have to do that. I believe he had them on the ark. And I believe they walked right off. And I believe that they lived for a while afterwards. How long? I don't know. But they lived during Job's time. And they were afraid of them. And I bet that if one come walking down McFarland Boulevard, there'd be a lot of people going the other way. Something where fire's shooting out of its mouth, I don't want anything to do with it. I'm not one of those redneck guys, Lance, that's going to say, I'm going to go kill that thing. I'm going to be one of those smart guys that says, that thing isn't killable. You can't touch that thing. I'll watch. Yeah, I'm one of them kind of people. God is saying that He's the only one that controls the mightiest of animals. You know why? Because He's the Creator. He made them. He takes care of them. Next week, not next week because I won't be here. Week after next, good Lord willing, Job will respond to God's challenges. And you will see that Job not only has learned a little bit from what God has said, but Job is so strong in his faith. You will see that next week. Job is not a man of weak faith. Job had a weak moment where he didn't understand some things. Who wouldn't misunderstand some things? We will see Job delivered from his present distress. But in case you have some wonderings about Job's friends, God's going to fix them too. And God's going to declare that Job, his servant, was more right than they were. I'm going to ask you to stand if you will. We'll have prayer, and let me get down there and take some of this stuff off, and we'll go ahead and carry the Lord's Supper out, which we have planned today. Brian, will you close us out, please?